Hey there, I'm Josh.
And I'm Jade. And on this episode of Our Taste is Trash,
we review the Emerald Fennel film Saltburn,
discuss Emmy Award winners and nominees,
and talk our weekly watches.
So remember to rate, review, and follow wherever you listen.
Stick around.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Welcome into another episode of Our Taste is Trash. I'm Josh.
And I'm Jade.
Jade, it's great to be back again because it's given me motivation to be back doing this podcast. Start paying attention again as to what's good and what's not. Even though I'm still relentlessly playing my Christmas gift, my PS5, but did see a few interesting things this week. And I will say, you know what, Jade? I'm going to start right off with this. Didn't really plan to, but there are some good movies still on Netflix, if you can believe it.
Oh, wow.
What I mean by that is, Jade, are you at the point where when you see a Netflix original, you just kind of go, I don't know. I don't know if I want to commit like 2 hours of my life.
100%. It is now like a choice of like, this could be either really, really good or absolutely horrible. And lately it's been leaning absolutely horrible.
See, Jade, I love that you're glass half full because I'm at the point now with Netflix movies where I'm like, this could either be a decently mediocre time or absolute dumpster fire. Like, to me, I don't hope for good most of the time.
Because I will say their foreign content is usually pretty good. And that's where I tend to lean. Yeah. Like, if it's an English film, like not like British English, but like if it's an American film, I'm usually like, ooh, this is probably not going to be good. But if I'm like, if this is like Spanish or Polish or German or Korean, I'm like, it's probably going to be good, to be honest. So I'll usually give those a chance.
Yeah. My wife convinced me, because actually I wanted to see this, Daniel Levy.
So
Daniel Levy has a new movie on Netflix called Good Grief. And essentially this film is about his husband, or in the movie, his husband dies, and very tragically in a car accident. And he's kind of picking up the pieces of his life as he's getting over the tragic loss of his husband. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, he kind of finds out that his husband was seeing someone else. So he's having to deal with that. And also finds a letter, like a Christmas card, because he died near Christmas. It kind of goes, hey, I met someone and we need to talk, like kind of thing. So he like finds he finds that like a year afterwards. So it's like, you know, kind of crazy, very emotional, little bit funny, not like kind of funny, but like, it's just a fun, good use of like 2 hours. Like it's an hour and a half, I think, something like that. So I really liked it. I think that Daniel Levy is very talented. If you liked Schitt's Creek, you would love, you know, I think you like his work. I'd recommend it. It's something that I broke down and did, even though it was on Netflix. I thought it was good. Although all I could think of is it must be nice to be a Hollywood Nepo baby that had access to all of these people. You have great friends in the industry. You're networked in places like the major studios like Netflix, and you can just do a fun little passion project that doesn't need to be in theaters and throw it on streaming. Must be great.
I know. Well, if only we were all born Nepo babies, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did you watch anything good this week, Jade?
I watched a couple of just like little things. I finished the miniseries Ted on Peacock. So this is a kind of spinoff of the Ted movies starring Mark Wahlberg and Seth MacFarlane. And this is kind of like almost like a prequel of when Johnny, the main character, was in high school, set in Boston. And I didn't expect it to be as like good as it is. And I'm saying it's like this amazing show you need to watch, but like, it's exactly what you think it is. It's funny. It's a little bit stupid. It's kind of clever. It's the same, you know, same humor. It's written by Seth MacFarlane. But there's some really good like lines in it and really good scenes. And the actor that plays the young Mark Wahlberg, holy fucking shit. Like, amazing Mark Wahlberg impression. essentially. He talked about, he was in an interview and he was like, I wasn't really trying to do an impression of Mark Wahlberg. I was just trying to more so do that, like, you know, Boston, New England kind of guy. And then I was like, yeah, but damn, if that's not Mark Wahlberg, like, pretty good, to be honest. Yeah. I thought that was that kid's actual accent. And then when he didn't have one in the interview, I was like, weird. But
you know,
yeah.
You know what's funny, Jade, is I saw a clip for this show on TikTok as well, but like, mm-hmm. I wasn't really paying attention. So I just thought it was a scene I had forgotten about in Ted 2 because it's the humor, like you said, is exactly the same. So I was like, oh yeah, that was a funny part. I'm sure I've seen that before, and just kept scrolling mm-hmm. past. And you're like, no, you were like, no, that's a new show. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. weird.
I know.
Well, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. That's what got me to watch it was TikTok. And then also they just put Tacoma FD on Netflix, which this actually is a true TV series that premieres on cable, and it used to be streamed exclusively by HBO Max, but of course they've been selling off all of their content, so Netflix
and has licensing it. The shit out of it, because no one can find it on their fucking app anyway, so
oh my god, yeah, that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, like, so Tacoma FD is by Broken Lizard Comedy Troupe, the same guys who did Super Troopers, Beer Fest, Puddle Jumpers, Club Dead, Quasi, but anyways, but it's a workplace comedy, 30-minute episodes about a bunch of, you know, guys working at the fire station getting up to like silly hijinks and goofy bullshit. And honestly, it's such an easy, stupid watch. Like, that's like one of those you just kind of throw on for quick laughs. Like, you don't really have to pay attention to, like, fold your laundry to it. But yeah.
Nice. Jade, if you don't mind, I really do want to jump right into the Emmys because
absolutely.
It was, although I didn't stay up, like I was going to stay up and watch it, but it's like on at like midnight here. So I was like, I don't know if I can really want to, I'll just watch the clips.
I think it premiered when I was like flying. So
you didn't watch it? Yeah. I only watch clips anyway now from most of these shows. Like I just go back and watch the highlights, you know, I'm like.
Because it's exhausting to watch now.
It is. Because they start red carpet like 3 hours fucking early and then they never start on time.
Jokes are never good. And then it's just awkward half the time. Yeah.
And like you can just get someone to tell you the good parts. You know, it's like you're like, oh, I can just watch the trailer.
That's what social media is for.
Yeah.
All the good clips end up on TikTok anyway. So whatever.
Well, Jade, pretty much if you weren't in either Succession, White Lotus, The Bear, and honorable mention to, did I say White Lotus? What did I say? I'm missing one.
You said White Lotus.
That's White Lotus. Yeah. If you were in any of those three shows, or Beef.
Beef.
Then you didn't really matter at the Emmys.
I mean, stand a chance.
It's crazy. The Succession had 27 nominations and they took home 6 awards.
Sorry, I just
crazy.
How?
What do you mean, how? Jade,
how?
To me, Succession in drama category only. Drama category only. It is for a series that is long running. There are other shows going on right now that are also nominated, like The Crown in a drama series that doesn't deserve to be standing next to Succession because the last season of Succession was actually fucking good. I can't say the same for The fucking Crown or a similar shows that were nominated within the category with it, except for The Last of Us.
Thank you. That was the one that I was going to say. I felt like I got gypped, and I feel like, and we talked about this before, anything to do with like sci-fi or fantasy never gets the same attention as these like overwrought fucking dramas.
Jade, you're gonna be even more upset when I tell you this. I misspoke because in the Globes, The Last of Us was nominated. Last of Us was not even nominated for drama series at the Emmys.
Yeah, I know. Categories.
Actually, it was. I'm sorry. I see it right here. I'm scrolling here looking at my notes, and I didn't see it, and now it's there. I swear it just appeared in front of me.
For drama. Yeah.
For drama series. We're talking about drama series right now. So Succession won. This is actually
Because they have, that's a large fucking category. That was 8, I think.
You had,
for drama and comedy.
You had Andor. You had which is crazy. That should even be on the fucking list. Better Call Saul, which has been a great show, although I fell off of it. You have House of Dragon, which was good. The Crown, The Last of Us was amazing. White Lotus was amazing. Mm-hmm. And Yellow Jackets, like, I've watched Yellow Jackets, but I mean, should that be here with all of these?
I don't know. I've watched it too. I just, you know what that show is. It's good. It's just, I don't know.
I think what Succession had going for it too is it was the final season and it went out on a great note, unlike some of the other shows that wrapped up this year. I think that's one of the things I had going for it.
Isn't Succession just King Lear? Like, we all knew
it was
going to happen.
It is King
right?
Lear. Yeah. But I mean, aren't most romantic comedies just fucking like either, what is it, Twelfth Night or...
it's all Shakespeare and Jane Austen, yes.
Yeah,
but
it's the same thing.
That's acceptable.
Or Pride and Prejudice. Like, that's what it is.
That's Jane Austen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's either like Emma or Pride and Prejudice or like, yeah. But
it's fine. It's fine. Outstanding comedy series. I don't think there's really a surprise here. The Bear season two was just... It was next level. That Christmas episode is still one of the best pieces of television I watched last year.
I remember like I had watched it and you guys hadn't watched it yet. And I was like freaking out because I was like, I swear to God, you need to watch the fucking Christmas episode so we can talk about how insane it is.
It was so good. So good. And this was up against the only one that I'm a little upset about here is it was up against Abbott Elementary, Barry, Jury Duty. I mean, Jury Duty, yes. I would love to see win something. Only Murders in the Building just wasn't as good this year. And even the last season of Ted Lasso, well, it was, I enjoyed it because it was, the story was good. It ended well. It just wasn't the caliber of season one. No. Marvelous Miss Maisel, just garbage last season.
The final season, yeah.
And then Wednesday. I had almost forgotten about Wednesday. And I feel like, do you think Wednesday suffered from being too early in the year?
I think it's a combination of exactly that, having come out earlier in the year. And then two, I think anything to do with teens is never going to get the same recognition as it is with like adult television.
And also I feel like it doesn't also have that HBO label. I feel like anything that has HBO still, I mean, now it's going to be Max, so we'll see moving forward, but like,
well,
HBO,
I feel
gets
like it's HBO, Netflix, and Apple and Hulu are the big boys now. And it's all streaming services, which is kind of insane. Like the fact that we have Abbott Elementary in here, which is a cable network show, like, because look at everything
it's
else. It's not cable network. Well, actually, is the Bear FX or is it just Hulu? No, it's just Hulu.
Was it FX? No. I think it was always just Hulu, right?
Yeah, it's always just Hulu. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the fact that that's the only cable network show listed and the rest are all streaming services, like,
this is where we are now. I remember that. And I remember having that argument with someone. Remember when, holy crap, because I remember him at the Emmys. What was that political show on Netflix?
House of Cards. It was their very first...
Remember
the show? It was the first streaming show, actually.
Yeah.
Ever.
Remember that was the huge deal that they even got into the Emmys and then they won. And I was like,
freaking out.
This is the new normal. I was like, this is what we're going to see now. And people are like, I don't know. Like the networks are still strong. And I'm like, no. Like you don't understand. Like this is different because the rules are different for streaming. You can do whatever you want. There's no
anything.
You can swear.
There's
you
no
can
censorship.
You can show full frontal. You can do whatever you fucking want. And there's no rules. And there's also no time constraints. You don't have to worry about 25 minutes or so many episodes.
If you need an extra 15 for the episode, you can do it.
Done.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter at all. It's crazy. Where were we? Comedy series, right?
Yeah. We just finished
out
comedy.
I was comedy series. So I also love seeing this one. Like literally the Emmys are the opposite of what I saw at the Globes for movies. Like with the Globes, I saw like no movies that, what do I want to say here? I hadn't seen most of the movies that were nominated. And I was like, I've watched a lot of shit this year. And how have I not seen this? I've seen almost every TV.
I've watched everything. Yeah. Same.
Even a lot of the nominations here, I'm looking at it going trash. Yeah. None of these would win. Beef winning for anthology series is just fucking amazing. It's next level. And I'm so excited for it.
You know, what was interesting to me was in this category, there was some stuff that was nominated that I didn't think would be nominated and stuff that were nominated for Globes for anthology that weren't in here. Like I thought Lessons in Chemistry would be in here.
It should
be. And they weren't.
Here.
It should be. I'm sorry, but Lessons in Chemistry, better than Obi-Wan Kenobi, better than Dahmer. I don't know how the fuck those two got in there.
Is that a 23 or 24 show? I thought it came out.
What was?
The Lessons in Chemistry. I thought that came out in 24, or did it come out late
2023? 2024, we've only been in a week.
Well, it's been like 3 weeks.
Lessons in Chemistry was prior to Christmas.
Remember? Oh, okay. I thought it came out like right around Christmas. So that's why.
No, not even close. But it's interesting to me, though. Actually, Fleischmann in Trouble being on here. I actually forgot about that show. And I watched that right when it first came out. I remember talking about it here on the podcast. And I was like, this is an incredible show. I'm glad it got nominated. But yeah. It's just what Dahmer and Kenobi were on here. I just can't.
Trash. Like, it's just, I mean, it's some of these
Beef
categories.
Deserves all the flowers for that.
100%. Beef was amazing. Beef was so great.
Oh, man.
And I mean, let's not even bother going over most of the directing credits, because most of those went to Secession, The Bear, or Beef.
Yeah.
Like, I think they all won for the same thing. And even the
surprise, surprise.
Even the drama categories went to all, or I should say, the acting categories for the most part went to those same shows. The one that I love, Kieran Culkin winning for lead actor in a drama series. Mm-hmm. He beats out Bob Odenkirk for Better Call Saul, Brian Cox from Secession. I forgot Jeff Bridges was even in a fucking show this year. He got nominated for the
old man.
Who watched that? No one.
Our parents, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Jeremy Strong for Secession. So pretty much if you were a male lead in Secession, you were nominated.
You're about to be nominated. Yeah. Pedro Pascal.
I would have loved to see him win here, but like Kieran Culkin, to me, that was a toss-up. Yeah. Like Kieran Culkin,
to be honest, I wasn't
amazing performance.
Terribly surprised by this. I absolutely loved Pedro Pascal's performance in Last of Us. I had a feeling it would still be Succession actor, and I think it's just because of the gravitas of what was happening in that last season. But I love that Kieran got like a actual like acting, like was it lead actor instead of supporting here? So,
and also, you know what's great is, one, he has seems like an amazing wife who is with him, who's like, he and his wife are like the star of the red carpet, and just seems like the whole awards season so far, he just looks like he's having, like, I was watching some of his speech and some of his interviews, he looks like he's having the fucking time of his life.
He's kind of like the awards darling right now. Like, the people are loving him, and honestly, good for him, and good for the Culkins in general. I feel like all three of them have been underrated, especially Kieran. But yeah, and also I just love this bit that he and Pedro have, because Pedro has been wearing a sling because he broke his shoulder. And so he's been saying on interviews, and he even, I think, said it in the Emmys that, because everyone's like, oh, what happened? And he's like, oh, Kieran Culkin beat the shit out of me. And it's like this fake beef because they're in the same category. And I love that Kieran has just completely gone along with it. Like when Pedro announced it on the stage, like the camera pans over to Kieran, and Kieran like acts like he's like all like so pissed that Pedro's talking about this on stage. He's like, oh, like I want to fucking kick your ass again for saying this. Like, so good.
It's fucking hilarious. You know, though, I'm disappointed in here. In one category is Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series. We have Sarah Snook, who takes home the award for Secession. We have a couple here, like Elizabeth Moss for Handmaid's Tale. Like, if you're still watching that, bless you. Like, yeah. Okay. Melanie Lynskey for
Yellow Jackets.
Sharon Hogan for Bad Sisters, which that would have been a great win. Like, I thought she did a great performance in that.
Sharon Hogan's always amazing.
Yeah, that is true. And then we have Bella Ramsey for The Last of Us. I would have loved to see Bella Ramsey take home a fucking statue for this role. And in this instance, I do think her performance was better than Sarah Snook, because for me, that must have been... I don't know what the rule is for being a lead in a show. It has to be screen time or amount or something like that.
I think it is screen time.
But I mean, Sarah Snook had to have been just barely in the minute count, because I mean, Secession is pretty evenly divided amongst those three kids and the parents. And to say that she's a lead actress in that show, I feel like it's a little bit of a stretch.
Well, and obviously, because I didn't watch the last season of Succession, so I can't really speak on Sarah's performance, but like Bella, I think, was just absolutely incredible as Ellie in The Last of Us. Like, I haven't really played the game. I've watched some gameplay, and I think they did such an incredible job of Ellie's portrayal. I think the emotional level, just building that relationship with Pedro's character. I mean, like, I don't know. I just think they did an incredible job. And if not Sarah Snook, I would have said Bella Ramsey for sure, especially compared to everyone else, which, by the way, I totally forgot I watched The Diplomat.
Oh, God. I forgot the show even came out.
I binged it over Christmas break at my aunt's house because I was like, let me just throw something on that I don't really care about. And first of all, drama, that's a comedy. I did not. Yeah, it's listed as drama. So I thought it was going to be this very serious political drama. And I put it on as like, this is a comedy. This is about Carrie Russell's incompetent husband constantly fucking her over.
Wild.
Like, I thought it was.
I always find it funny how they categorize some shows because, like, mm-hmm. I can see an argument sometimes in categorizing, but do you think it's just up to the person who's like, the person who's not like submitting the award, or do you think there's a criteria that they have to meet to be a drama or a comedy?
I think it's almost up to whoever's submitting it, because I think a lot of times they kind of pick and choose based on who they're going up against and who they, I think, have a better chance of beating. And I think when they look at the overall tone of the show, I think they're like, okay, I think people are going to read this show as a drama rather than a comedy. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting because it's we've talked about this before, where so many things are dramedies, where they they balance that line. And Diplomat is a dramedy, I would say. So does Succession.
Well, and I think The Bear also is in that category, because
The Bear is a dramedy.
If I were to tell you if you had zero context for The Bear, and I were to tell you this is a great comedy, you should watch it, what would you think if I said there's a comedy that's about a guy who owns a restaurant in Chicago?
Oh, you're going to think this is like laugh out loud, no. Jokes left and right. But that's not it.
It will tear your soul out every other fucking episode.
Yeah, but I cried heavily watching the show.
It's one of the few shows I can't watch back to back and binge it because I'm so fucking stressed out. Like, I'm watching that show and I'm just like, having mm-hmm. never even worked, you know, professionally in a kitchen before in my career, like, it gives me anxiety for a job that I never had. Like, I'm like I'm just so fucking on edge every other episode.
Yeah. And for those of who have worked in a kitchen, it's like PTSD.
Yeah.
The ticket episode, when the tickets are shooting out, gave me fucking flashbacks to when I was working at Moe's and we first got the fucking spligot orders. And so we were not only dealing with people in the store, phone orders, but then we had the goddamn online orders. So you're sitting there over at the hot station, you're trying to take the order of the person in front of you, and that machine's just shooting fucking tickets out. And you're like, and then all of a sudden someone from the register would come down with a handwritten like phone order. And I'm like, I can't, guys, we can't do this. I
can't. Oh my God. With that said, Jeremy Allen White took home the statue for outstanding lead actor in a comedy series, which I think, I mean, looking at the category here,
makes 100%, sense.
You know, Jade, can I interrupt our train of thought here for a second? Because this is not going to be timely. We obviously, guys, spoiler, we record this in advance. This will probably be old news by then.
Yeah.
I have some tragic news for you, Jade.
Oh.
This isn't political news, not movie news.
Oh.
Ron DeSantis just suspended his campaign for president.
I couldn't even, like, I was going to try to pretend to be sad, and I literally can't.
Does it mean no more high heels on the campaign trail?
Oh my God. I was literally about to say that. I'm like, we were missing out on the high heeled cowboy.
I'm going to miss that. He said, quote, "Oh, no clear path to victory."
Wow. He's only just now realizing that. Jesus fucking Christ.
came across my phone. Came across my phone as I was looking at my notes here. And speaking of comedy.
Because the actors in this category were interesting picks to me. Like, I think Jason Segel did an incredible job in Shrinking.
100%.
Like, he deserves to be there. Bill Hader for Barry. I never really got into Barry, but
I don't know anyone who's watching Barry. Like,
I don't know who's still watching that show. I think this was the last season.
I don't even know.
Jason Sudeikis makes sense. Ted Lasso, but Martin Short for Only Murders. I was just so surprised because we've talked about this last season of Only Murders was so fucking terrible. I don't know. There was obviously redeeming moments, but
Meryl Streep was the redeeming moment of the season. That's the only thing.
they knew that was the only reason people were sticking around.
She was the only one who was actually acting in the whole fucking show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, yeah. And also, why is it that there are 6 people nominated for drama, but only 5 for comedy?
It's weird. Yeah, I noticed.
And
that
that's a lot of the categories are like that.
Yeah, anyway, I don't know. I don't know what makes them go, oh yeah, what's, we're gonna have 6 in this and 5 in this one. I don't know.
Yeah, weird.
But we do get some deviation in the outstanding lead actress category for a comedy.
Yes.
We
get
Clonita Brunson for Abbott.
Quinta.
Quinta? Quinta. There's Clonita. I'm adding an I. I did. I see what I did there. Quinta Brunson for Abbott Elementary. She beats out the only one. I mean, I love that she won here because I haven't watched the show.
Same.
I've read a lot about it. I've seen
it. Have you not watched it yet? It's so good. It's like one of the few cable network shows that's actually so legit.
But so Jade, having been a person that's watched both of these shows, would you say Quinta Brunson for Abbott Elementary or Jenna Ortega for Wednesday?
Okay.
Is that tough? Is that
no, not even. Sorry. Let me just say, I think the second person in this category, if it was not Quinta Brunson, I would have said Natasha Lyonne for Poker Face, because Poker Face was so good as well. Like, I just talked, you know, I binged that recently on Peacock, and that was such a great show. I think Natasha Lyonne does an incredible job in everything she's in, but Jenna Ortega is an incredible actress. I loved her in Wednesday. We talked about it when the show aired. But as far as comedic performances and comparisons, I don't think it was as strong as Quinta's performance in Abbott Elementary. And I think this is just comes down to also, I think, the style. I think it's hard because even though Jenna Ortega did a great job and the show can be considered funny, it's not like her performance was outright funny. It was funny in context to what was happening around her, because she's dry and serious and everything's dark. And so everything comes off as funny. But I think, like, whereas Quinta's performance is actually funny, it's these beats, these things that you hit in a comedy that make it what it is. I don't know. Plus the fact that she writes that show, you know what I mean? And produces that show.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I don't want to take anything away from her. The only one that I saw, and the only person that I saw in the category that could compete would be Wednesday.
Which, by the way, I think I mentioned this last time, but the fact that she's now won 2 Emmys for this role and that the show has won so many awards, mind you, she started off writing for BuzzFeed. You know what I mean?
That's
like, and doing skits for BuzzFeed and on YouTube. Like, yes, I think about it all the time because that's where I know her from.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, now she just is this award-winning television show writer, producer, and actress. Like,
yeah,
just love that for
fucking doing it. Like, fucking doing it. You know, really quick, just to run through here, of course we have Stephen Yuan and Ellie Wong. Is it Yuan, right? Stephen
Yuan.
Yuan. For Beef, and Ellie Wong for Beef as well.
Beef as well.
In outstanding or limited, or is it limited or anthology series?
Yep.
Which, I mean, I'm not even going to bother to say who they're up against because they deserve those wins, 110%. The last one I want to mention here, Jade, is outstanding supporting actress in a drama series. Basically, the entire cast of White Lotus was nominated in this role. You had Aubrey Plaza, Jennifer Coolidge, Megan Fahey, with, you know, special
Sabrina
shout out
Pasciatore, Simona Tabasco.
Yes. Oh yeah, I forgot about them too. Yeah. So pretty much, if you were an actress in
actresses.
The show, you're an actress in the show, you were nominated, and Jennifer Coolidge took home the award for best supporting actress. Well deserved. Did you see any of her presentation? Did you see it?
Hilarious. Of course, I watched her whole speech.
Like, hilarious.
Jennifer Coolidge is such a gem.
Was it the Globes or was it the Emmys where she did the bit where she goes, they asked me to present?
I think it was the Globes.
That was fucking hilarious.
So good.
She's like, they asked me to present and I'm not good at it. And I said yes. And then I called back immediately and said, I can't I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing. And they said, no, you can do this. And then, like, literally she's reading off of a card, like, because she describes how she can't fucking present. And then she's reading, she goes, I wasn't fucking lying. I have to read off of this card. Like, it was so good. Like, that's fucking hilarious.
So good. These gays, they're trying to murder me. I mean, like, hello, iconic. Like, who else could deliver a line like that?
Oh, God.
And pretty much everyone from Succession and The Bear won the rest of the categories for supporting actor and actress.
Ayo Edebiri for supporting actress, which, good for her. Like, she's having an amazing year.
Matthew McFadden for Succession, Eben Moss-Bachrock for The Bear, which his storyline for The Bear, loved. Oh, incredible.
Love it. Yeah.
And then for limited series, Paul Walter Hauser for Blackbird, which... fucking shocking.
Blackbird, that's fucking wild. I don't know anyone who watched that. I don't know, it was on my list for a while and then I was like, I don't know if I can watch that.
Yes, especially compared to like Jesse Plemons, who did Love and Death, Marie Bartlett and Chippendales. Like, that's just wild to me. Like, even the two actors from Beef, like Joseph Lee and Young Mazzino, I was like, oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And then supporting actress, we did, actually, this was a really well-deserved one, Niecy Nash for Dahmer, which love that for her. I love Niecy Nash. I didn't watch Dahmer, so I can't speak to her performance in that, but just her as an actress in general, I always enjoy her on screen. So I feel like this is probably really well-deserved. And then just one other quick mention for animation, The Simpsons. After all these goddamn years, yes, they were up against Bob's Burgers, Intergalactic, Primal, and Rick and Morty. And
every single one of those shows has been on for multiple seasons. Like,
with the exception of Intergalactic, which is the one that I think probably should have won. This was an original animated series by Kid Cudi. And personally, I mean, I didn't watch it. So again, maybe I'm completely off base here, but like, it was nominated, so I imagine it's good. So I just feel like, I don't know. It's like, this has been on for God knows how fucking long. You can't just give someone else like their flowers, trash, their opportunity. Yeah.
Movie review. First look.
Well, Jade, I want to jump in now just to take a first look at our movie this week because I'm super excited to talk about this. It's Saltburn. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime. Jade, I watched this movie for the second time and I caught more things. I took more notes than I think I've taken on any movie in the past, like, had 6 months worth of fucking movies at least. Like, I am
not surprised,
beyond excited to talk about this film. It is everything that people say it is, but people take away the wrong things from this movie. Like, that's correct, all I'm going to say about it. Like, especially in the rewatch, I'm going, even if you take this movie at surface level and you take away the, ooh, that's gross stuff, or even the, this is an eat the rich, you've taken away the wrong message. You don't understand this movie and you need to watch it again. And like, this is a movie, Jade, that if I was in my teens or early 20s, this would be my Cruel Intentions. Like, this would be a movie that I, and this still might be a movie that I watch over and over again, like two or three times a year.
Oh, for sure. I could see this being like, and it's interesting because I think this is kind of a defining movie of a generation a little bit, the same way that, you know, we had, like you mentioned, Cruel Intentions, like very much so. But I think it does take a while to get to the root of what the movie's actually trying to say if you're not as in tuned to the messaging, you know, because like, obviously I had a very different perspective of Cruel Intentions when I was younger compared to today.
And I think too, I think this is a movie that could evolve over, like if I wasn't a fully frontal lobe developed adult, I think that I would have a very different message of this movie if I was in my 20s or if I was in my teens.
Absolutely.
Teens. Shouldn't be watching this if you're tweens. But you know, one thing I want to say that just off this topic, Jade, for a minute is, the soundtrack for this fucking movie, I downloaded it. It's like
downloaded.
You didn't like the soundtrack to this fucking movie?
No, I
mean,
do.
I had a lot of these songs.
Who downloads it?
I have streaming, Jade. Come on, like I have it. Just
thank you. But who says? Okay, that's what you say. You said
how dare
downloaded
you.
It. I was like,
Yeah, I downloaded it. Well, I did download it to my phone because you know how you can just have it there for streaming? No, I want these on my phone at all times.
I just like add the playlist to my list.
How dare you try to out millennial me? Don't Gen Z me on my own show.
I will. I will make you feel old.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about our movie this week. It is Saltburn. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime.
Feature presentation.
Did you know there was a college Christmas party tonight? NFI, me and you, not fucking invited. You all right?
Yeah, I've got a flat tire.
Take my bike.
Hey, that is so kind. Thank you. I'm sorry I don't know your name. I'm Felix.
Oliver.
Oliver. Oliver, I love you. I love you. All right, cheers, Ollie.
My parents, they've got problems.
What kind of? What do you mean, problems?
I don't think I'll ever go home again.
Well, why don't you come home with me? Come to Saltburn.
Our movie this week is Saltburn. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime. This movie, is it stacked, Jane? Would you say it has a stacked cast? I think it has a pretty solid. The casting choices were great in this fucking movie.
Absolutely. I mean, I think now we would say stacked because I think most of these people are now in the forefront. But yeah, like, I think previous to this, I don't think as many people would recognize the names as much. Oh, I feel like
2 years ago, you wouldn't recognize half of this cast.
Yeah, I feel like you would know Rosamund Pike, maybe Jacob Elordi if you're a Euphoria fan.
Yeah, but even so, when did Euphoria start? 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
It's a while ago. Jacob Elordi is also known for like Kissing Booth and
but that also came out in like 2018, 19, something somewhere in there, right?
That's what I'm saying. So he would have already been a household name by now. Like he already was, because then Priscilla also came out this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like Jacob Elordi really wasn't a name until like season 3, because I knew who he was, but like,
no, Josh. The girlies
knew the name Jacob Elordi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knew him just from Kissing Booth.
Yeah.
Just the first fucking Kissing Booth movie. I was like, who's this hot guy? He's like super tall.
I do enjoy his role in this because, well, yes, I think he plays a solid role in Euphoria. I think his acting chops in this have matured 100,000% since the Kissing Booth first movie that I saw him in, and even like season 1 of Euphoria.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, I think prior to this, you would have known Rosamund Pike, Carey Mulligan, and Jacob Elordi, maybe. Yep. And then that's kind of it. I mean, now we know Barry Keoghan, you know, he's had some major roles, but I feel like this has made him a household name.
I mean, he was in The Banshees of Inisherin with Colin Farrell.
He's in that one war movie. Then he was in Eternals, the Marvel film. So he's a Marvel superhero.
Yeah. The Killing of the Sacred Deer. That was a war movie, right? Yeah. And then... He was also in the Green Knight, oddly enough.
That's
he
right. Was, and then Archie Madekwe. So if you watched him this year, he just had a lead role in Gran Turismo.
He was amazing. Do you remember him from Midsommar?
That's right.
Yeah, it was Jade. It was bothering me. I watched Gran Turismo and I was like, where the fuck do I know this kid from? Mm-hmm. And then I looked him up and I was like, he's the one kid in fucking Midsommar. I was like, that's where I've seen his face before. But he's also a star on the rise. Like all of a sudden he was, I don't remember, I didn't know his fucking name, that's for goddamn sure. And then all of a sudden he's in Gran Turismo. He's a supporting actor in Saltburn. I think we're going to see a lot more from him coming up.
100%.
Also, you know who I liked in this? Who literally, I don't think she has a lot of credits to her name. She plays Venetia Kenton. Or is it Venetia or Venita? Yeah. Venita. Venetia, right?
Venetia.
Mm-hmm. Allison Oliver. I thought that she delivered some of my favorite lines in this whole fucking movie. And she's a relative newcomer to Hollywood. There's not much in her IMDb that I recognize. And I was like, I'm excited to see her in more things because her performances were, I felt like fantastic in the roles, in the scenes that she was in.
Oh, she was great. Yeah,
and
I agree.
I feel like we have to talk about this being written and directed by, do I call her Midge from Barbie? I feel like that's unfair. But
no,
Emerald Fennell, who also, I mean, this is not her first either, well, she wasn't an act in this, but definitely not her first introduction to Hollywood. She also directed and wrote Promising Young Woman, and also had a role in The Crown, I believe, in season four or five. She was one of the younger Camillas in the Crown. And she also did play Midge in Barbie. What's also funny, Jada, is that Margot Robbie is also one of the producers on this film.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how it happened, essentially, was they actually filmed Barbie in England. So they were very close as far as the sets go, which is how Margot was able to produce Saltburn while also starring in Barbie. And because of that, that's how Emerald Fennell kind of had that very small role of playing Midge in the Barbie set as well.
Oh, and also, that makes sense.
Yeah. And of course, Emerald, you know, is good friends with Greta Gerwig.
So. Yeah, that also makes sense.
Yeah, you know.
But Emerald Fennell and Greta Gerwig just make sense hanging out. Like, their personalities seem to...
They're two sides of the same coin. One's British, one's American, you know? they like, sometimes act, but they're also, like, writers and directors.
They need to make, like, a movie, like, collaborate somehow. Like, fucking Tarantino and...
Can you imagine what that would be like?
Yeah. What was the one that... What was that called? Grindhouse, where Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez made those films. That's what I want Greta Gerwig and Emerald Fennell to do that same type of thing.
Like a double feature film.
Some like double feature indie fucking off the wall shit. Like I would watch the fuck out of that. I would watch that. Got fuck Oppenheimer or Barbenheimer. I want to see whatever they come up with. That would be 10 times fuck Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, Jay, let's dive into it here because I think there's so much to unpack in this movie. Let's start off with the trash. What for you was trash in this film?
I didn't have too much, to be honest, but I think for me, there was just a few moments where I felt like they kind of set something up for it to not really go anywhere. One was I kind of felt like there would be more involvement by Duncan, the like head butler or whatever his name was. Like I thought there was something there because it seemed like Duncan kind of had Oliver's, you know, ticket. Like he kind of knew like something was off about him. And I couldn't tell if it was like he's just this way with everyone Felix invites over or if he's that way because he knows that Oliver is like not of the same caliber. So he's just treating him like shit because of class reasons or if it's because he was like, this guy is fucking off and I know that he's off. And I thought something was going to happen there. Like I thought he was going to like catch him because there were so many moments, you know, where Oliver kind of showed his like true self. And I kept thinking, oh my God, Duncan's going to know. He's going to find out. And he never did.
I agree. Like I agree in a different sense. Like I wish there was more Duncan. Like I'll say that.
Same.
I wish we had more Duncan scenes because I felt like his scenes were great and so well delivered and uncomfortable. And I think it added so much to every scene that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
What someone said, and I kept this in mind as I was doing my second rewatch of the movie. Someone said, Duncan is Saltburn. And they said, Duncan does not have loyalty to the people, but he has loyalty to the place. And I was like, that makes so much sense. Like when you think about the lines that he delivers, when you think about the things that he says, and when you think about the way he acts around the family and around Oliver, he is trying to protect, I think, this idea, this symbolism that is Saltburn. And I don't think he gives a fuck whether it's the Canton family or if it's Oliver. Yeah. And I think that his loyalty is just to the whole, this aesthetic, this perception that the family and everyone who's lived there has put into the place. And I think he sees himself as this, I might be reading too much into this, but I think he sees himself as this safeguard of those standards and of that tradition. And he's, because like, even when like, think about even when like Jacob Elordi's character dies, like Felix dies, you know, he's more concerned with ensuring fucking lunch is served on time and that the family is not disturbed during lunch while they cart his goddamn body across the fucking, you know what I mean?
I think part of that too, and this is why I think there is still some loyalty to the Cattons because, you know, I think for him, it's he knows that the family is using this like daily activity, the lunch, as a way to almost kind of remove themselves from what's happening to keep up some sort of pretense of like normalcy amidst, you know, a very tragic time. And I think Duncan just plays into that because he's like, okay, this is like what the family needs right now. But like when he's trying to close that curtain, you can tell he's so upset. And you could tell he genuinely is upset that Felix has died, because I do think he does have some love and loyalty to Felix a little bit. And I think that goes for every one of these characters. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like Felix was the golden boy, truly, because I think he actually ultimately is still kind and does still have like this. I think that's why Oliver was attracted to him in the first place, is he kind of has this air about him that like people are just attracted to, that they want to be around, like, because he's not this horrible person. There are some negatives, and we'll get into that about who he is as a person. But like, ultimately, I think he is kind of that central character that people flock to. But yeah, I will say that was a trash for me. What about for you?
One of the things for me that really bothered me in this film, I have two little notes that I'm not really going to get into, but like, one, I would have loved some more homoeroticism between Barry Keoghan and Joseph Bellorti. There was a little bit, but like, honestly, make me feel like there was real, sell me on that grave scene, because I love the grave scene. I think it's great. Everyone's talking about it. If you don't know what that is, I'm not going to spoil it for you. It's on TikTok. Watch the fucking movie, but like, sell me more on that. I wanted to see more of that. Also, how does Oliver get away with ripping out the breathing tube at the end and no one?
Oh my God. Okay. Thank you for mentioning it. Because I thought about that as well. As I'm like, if you ripped out the fucking breathing
tube, someone's going to know. You can't put that back in. Someone's going
to
know.
Thank you. And it's like, even if you manage to get it back in, if they decide to do an autopsy, they're going to see that all that in there has been damaged from it being ripped out. Yes. And I'm like, I thought the same thing. I was like, how are you getting away with her dying this way? Like, if anything, you should have just shut all the machines off. You know what I mean?
Even just disconnecting it was fine. Like, if you had disconnected, you could have sold it on the fact that like, oh, it came undone. I wasn't in there.
I'm like, that part was fucking weird. I was like, I don't.
That was to me a little too much. Oh, but you know what really bothered me the most, Jade? And I didn't think the movie needed this in both the beginning and in the end of the movie. The flashbacks we got in both the beginning and the end, I didn't need to be spoon-fed like that.
I think... So you mean to like how everything happened and like unfolded?
So remember in the beginning where you get all those little flashbacks right in the beginning of the movie where he's like, this is how it happens, and you get all these little scenes, and then even at the end, and I'm like, I really...
Well, okay.
I would have had more ambiguity around the fact that he actually killed some of these people.
The beginning flashbacks, I think, were fine for me because at the time, they weren't really flashbacks because we hadn't seen those scenes yet. And I think that sold me on like his love of Felix, because it was a series of these quick images of Felix, right? Of these like very intimate portraits of him. And that helped kind of bring me into Oliver's obsession over him. But the end, I get what you're saying. I think there was still some ambiguity, though, regardless, with the flashbacks, because for me, like another thing that I was going to point out was like, we learn through the flashbacks that he killed Felix by putting a shit ton of drugs in the champagne bottle that he ends up handing him. So it looks like it's an overdose, but it's still so vague on Venetia, because all we see is him putting razor blades next to the bathtub. And I'm like, okay, so did he slit her wrists and make it look like a suicide, or did he just put the razors there and then she killed herself? Like,
I don't think there's any question about it, because before that you see him so intricately plan his meeting with Felix. You see him plan certain moments with Felix, then murder him. And I'm like, I would assume, maybe not. Maybe you're right. Maybe I just assumed that if he's that much into the detail of the things that have happened, he probably killed her too.
Because that to me, I was like, you kind of spelled everything else for us. Like, they showed how he intentionally punctured Felix is tired to like have that meet cute, how he pretended not to have money so that Felix would come to his rescue, like, and sell his story. But the Venetia thing, it was weird because like all it showed was just him putting the razors there. And I was like, so what does that mean? Did he kill her or did he just put it in her mind to kill herself?
They also weren't very clear on how, you know, Elizabeth got, you know,
Elspeth.
Sick. Elspeth. Yeah, Elspeth. Elizabeth. Elspeth got sick.
Elspeth.
Yes. Got sick because.
So I thought that's a classic, like, probably just small poisoning of something that people don't recognize in your system over a period of time, like rat poisoning or something. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of chemicals actually that you can do that.
Jesus.
I just watched enough television and movies at this point.
One of the ones that I saw that was very, this is not slow, this is like instant, mm-hmm. but this wife, this was from, what's that drug show on Netflix with Ozarks? I was watching Ozarks.
Oh, yeah, Ozark.
The wife in one of the side characters mm-hmm. kills her husband by, she daily took apples. And she ground up apple seeds into a powder.
Yeah, because they're arsenic. Right?
Yeah. And so, yeah. So mm-hmm. she took dozens and dozens of apples and ground mm-hmm. the seeds into a fine powder. And then she slipped that into this guy's coffee and killed him. And I was like, fucking wild.
Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, it's for sure. I could totally 100% see him doing that. Like, easily. Yeah. Like, you don't think he would. But it's interesting to me, though, because I'm curious as to how he convinced her to sign over Saltburn to him.
That I wish we had gotten more clarity on because we don't. And
I would have liked to seen that scene a little bit. Not exactly of her being like, I'm going to sign it over to you, but like a scene where they were at the house together and he kind of sowed his seeds a little bit more. Yeah.
I guess we could make the leap that, you know, she obviously throughout the entire movie has an affection for him from day one because he figures out her number immediately. And, you know, I think with all of her family gone, you know, him creating that moment. I think that we could just make the leap that him having that influence over her being the only person there that's entertaining her, you know, eventually made that.
I figured that as well, but it's just, that was interesting to me.
Jade, let's move over to what was treasure about the film. I just want to start off by saying this movie is set in 2006 and the 2006 aesthetic in this film is unmatched.
It was so well done.
Right down to the eyebrow piercing for Jacob Elordi as Felix. Like I was like, mm-hmm. I literally had nearly the same eyebrow piercing in 2006.
I know.
Like not like, I was like that, but like, That was a style. That was a thing that you would see that you wouldn't even question. If you saw a guy with an eyebrow piercing, that was the early 2000s. Well,
I think about that, especially with Venetia. Like, even though she comes from this money, this was very much the era of like indie sleaze is kind of coming in. You know, we still had that like emo style. So she had like the heavy eyeliner around the eyes without a ton of eyeshadow. Like, this was also like the era, like if you saw, like she has like chipped black nail polish, like that was the look. And then she has the overly bleached hair that has not been taken care of because prior, if you guys were not around during this era, prior to now we have social media, YouTube, beauty talk, like all this bullshit where everyone has much more knowledge about taking care of their skin, their hair, all of that. Like you have to remember, like even if you had money, it wasn't as common that, first of all, the whole world wasn't looking at you the same way. You know what I mean? Like you weren't putting your shit on social media and then being, why is your hair so fried? Like you were only hearing from the people around you. And if you were rich enough, people around you were not going to talk shit about your hair.
This was also before, right? Just before, like a year before, maybe 2 years removed from the era of social media at parties. Like it wasn't until like 2008, 2009.
It was when Facebook went public. Yeah. Like,
Well, not just Facebook public, but also I'm thinking the smartphone. Like people didn't have smartphones in 2006. Like people weren't in 2006 taking photos and posting them on Facebook same day. Like that wasn't a thing.
No, yeah, yeah. There wasn't that, yeah. There wasn't that level of anything. So yeah, this is definitely like, again, like before your shit was out there in the world. So like the way you looked only matters to people directly around you at the time. And so like, I just love that attention to detail. And also I love that Emerald Fennell, she kept her, some of her clothes from 2006 because she was in college in 2006. This is obviously pulling from her personal experience, and she actually used them as some of the costume pieces for Venetia, which just again made it feel that much more authentic and real.
Also, I love the choice here of shooting this. I'm not going to the aspect ratio, but it's 4:3 aspect ratio is what most people would call it, and it's, you know, that back pre a time when
before
we had
widescreen,
before we had white. Well, we had widescreen, but like, you know, most people had a 4:3 television.
Your average TV, yeah.
And most things were shot that way as well, unless you were going to a special screening in a movie somewhere. But the other reason I like it, one, it reflects the time era that they were in. But two, it makes you feel like you're creepily, like the way that Emerald Fennell frames her shots, like sets up her scenes. It feels like you're a like truly a voyeur in some of these scenes to me.
Oh my gosh.
It feels like you're peeking in and getting a glimpse into something the whole time.
Yes.
I don't know how to describe it because I feel like
it does. I feel like the 4:3 helped with also this feeling of kind of closing in. I felt like everything was tight and slightly claustrophobic. And I think that aided in this idea that like there's this kind of this tension, this tenseness between each character. And because as you're watching, you know that there's something off about Oliver, and you know that there's this weird intention behind everything that he's doing. And it gets revealed to you slowly through what's called true Oliver. But yeah, I think that 4:3 kind of creates this closeness and this claustrophobia a little bit in the scenes that pushes characters together, because, you know, when you shoot something in a wider aspect ratio, you can allow your characters to obviously have this space. They can be further out because they're further out to the screen. When you're shooting in 4:3, they have to be really tight in, and those tight in shots, I mean, just, it gives you exactly what you need in this scene. And it was so intentionally thought out. And I think it was just such a great choice.
And these are stylistic things, Jade. Also for me, the fonts that they chose, the title sequences, amazing. Mm-hmm. And the music to me was just perfect. Like,
oh, the music.
I loved every choice that was made for music in this fucking movie. It's unreal. It's been a long, this movie made me think of like 90s teen dramedy, romance fucking movies. Like remember,
it was
when
all the
just
classic like 06 kind of punk indie sleaze songs. Like we had fucking Killers in here. We had, what was the Murder on the Dance Floor? Like,
what's her name? I can't think of her name.
I can't think of her name either.
But Jay, this makes me think of like, remember when soundtracks in a movie just fucking killed it? Like certain movies like would just kill it with their soundtrack.
It's when people cared about the music in the movies, you know, and it was before, I think we talked about this before too, is before you were trying to sell a new song with a film. It's like, no, we want what feels best, what feels like what's happening in the film right now. Like what song gives you that vibe? And I think this works so well for that. And I think another kind of treasure for me as well was I loved the choice of, again, I mentioned this before, this like true Oliver, where you get these glimpses into who Oliver actually is. And it's like a flip of a switch, and you see it. He kind of reveals himself first to Venetia. I think it's kind of the first time we really see it. And it's, you know, that creepy moment that
I love finds that her. Scene.
It was good. Not as shocking as people were trying to make it out to be on social media. Cause like I was trying to avoid as much as I possibly could about this film, cause I didn't want it to get spoiled, but I would hear about specific scenes that I didn't quite know what was happening.
Three scenes
all the time.
And
this is
none
one
of them. None of them are as shocking to me as they actually were in the movie. I feel like people are very shocked.
I was like, to be honest, I was like, First of all, this happens behind closed doors a lot. I don't think you understand.
1,000%. Jade, can I give a spoiler though on one of the scenes? Because there's only one part that truly disgusts me, and it's not for the reason that you think. Like so part of the bathtub scene disturbed me, not because he was drinking the bathwater.
The bathtub one was the grossest to me.
But not because he was drinking the bathwater. That's fine. Not because he jerked off in it or anything like that. Like, whatever. He's drinking the bathwater. I'm like, okay, hey, you want to be a little bit weird? That's fine. Like, or if that's a thing that gets you off.
Was it the licking of the bathtub?
The tonguing of the fucking drain. And I was like, but it's not.
Thank you.
Drains are not, like, I get germophobia and like that.
That made me gag because like.
Me too, Jade.
I know it's in a drain. You know what I mean?
Like, you might as well lick a gas pump. Like,
because the bathwater thing, I was like, look, whatever. People on the internet fucking sell their dirty bathwater and people drink it.
You know, people drink it. You know, people drink it.
Of course they do. And whatever. At the end of the day, it is what it is. If that's your prerogative, sure.
The Venetian scene just did not bother me whatsoever. Like, whatever.
That didn't bother me at all. That's actually very common. It's not for me, but like, do your thing, whatever. But yeah. Anyways, but that scene showed Oliver, like he was in control. He was a little bit dark. He, you know, he didn't shy away from the things that would normally freak other people out. And that's when he showed his true colors, which also, by the way, the line where he talks about him being a vampire, I think was such a twofold line. I loved it because, yeah, it's like, oh, I'm a vampire because I'm going to, you know, whatever with your blood. But also, I think he truly is a vampire in terms of he is sucking this life from them. He is taking from them, you know, and he really revealed himself there. And then, of course, the second time is with Farley when he kind of jumps in bed and then like.
That's one of the scenes that I don't know why no one's talking about that scene. That scene. You talk about disturbing. That scene disturbed me a little bit.
When he like jerks him off and then is like, are you going to behave?
Basically sexually assaults them. And I was like, why is no one talking about this fucking scene? Like,
that was so weird to me. And not because it's man on man. I don't give a shit about that. No. But it's because it was an assault. Like, it was this weird moment of like, because Farley to me was interesting because I was like, it seemed like he also had a little bit of an attraction to Oliver, but he also was wary of Oliver. Like, he knew there was something wrong with him. And
everyone knows on some level that something's wrong with Oliver, but like, can't put their finger on it. Like, everyone
None of them can figure it out. But yeah, that scene, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Like, this is just, and because they never finish out the scene until you see the flashback that at one point it seems like they completed and then fell asleep in the bed together. Although of course we know that Oliver doesn't fall asleep, but Farley did. So I was like, okay, interesting, like where this went. Like, I don't know, but I love those little moments where you see a glimpse into who he is as a person, and it's dark. Like, when he shows himself both those times, you're like, oh, this guy's like fucked in the head.
I mean like literally him just making up the fact that his dad dies, his mom's a drug addict, and that he's an only child. Like, look, I'm fine with making up things about your life to, you know, in certain situations, but like, that's
everyone I think embellishes that's a unhinged. Little bit, especially in the beginning when you meet someone, because you want to appear a certain way, right? Like, that I feel like is run of the mill, but like, to fake a parental death,
it's someone that, like, you love, like something like it's one thing to be like, oh, I'm estranged from one of my parents and they died,
right?
Like, that might be a little bit weird, but like,
but you could be like, I can understand if you didn't talk to your parent for 10 years and you're like, they're dead. And then you find out they're alive. You're kind of like, okay, well, whatever. I get it.
Felix handled that situation way better than anyone. Like the fact that he was calm, even like the calm that he exhibited. Like, even afterwards where he was like, dude, you got to go back home. Like, you can't stay. Like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
He just rationalizes it like in such a rational way. And I'm like,
yeah, that's what I felt. To me, Felix was such a genuine character. Like, you know, I don't think he was this, like, I think almost some people probably would have portrayed him as like, oh, he's this prince who everything is good for him. And so he just treats people like they're disposable. But I don't think he really does. I think he genuinely does actually care about Oliver. But like, I think there is a little bit truth to what Oliver says when he's like, you wanted a performance and I gave you one. And I think there's truth to that. I think Felix was a little bit more interested in Oliver once Oliver told him about his like fucked up life, right? Because, you know, Felix is an aristocrat. So, you know, everything is handed to him. Everything in his life is essentially perfect in a sense. And so here's this person. And again, we also have to think about the fact that these are two English majors. And as an English major, I can tell you, I know these types of people. And it's where you are fascinated by the stories of others, because oftentimes if they say, write what you know, and if you haven't lived kind of a colorful life, what do you write about, right? Like if you don't have that type of imagination. And I feel like for Felix, here's this person that has led this interesting, intriguing life, right? And this is something that Felix would never be able to experience for himself. And so I think for him, it's like, this is it's an interesting character, an interesting story. This is something I could write about, essentially, in a way. And then Oliver, also being an English major, is a storyteller. And that's what he does. He tells his stories. And I think he also sees everyone at Saltburn as characters. These are characters in his story, and he is writing them. And he's writing them by being the character that they all want to see him be. Like, oh, like I love that line at the end when he does that. And he's like, did I not perform well enough for you? Or whatever it was. Did you not like my performance? And I was like, oh my fucking God. No. That's exactly it.
I want to get to some of the lines here, Jade, but first, the best performance. I mean, do you have anyone else selected besides Barry Keoghan? Because I feel like this is his movie. I'm not saying the other performances aren't great. The other performances are amazing in this film. Mm-hmm. But Barry Keoghan, this is the first time I've looked at him and been like, holy shit, man, like you can fucking act.
This is his movie for sure. Because like I said, the fact that he has two Olivers, the fact that he can switch from I'm this sweet, just innocent guy with all these bad things happening to me to being like this dark, planning, manipulative person. I mean, such an incredible job. Also, not to mention, in case people don't know, the graveyard scene we're talking about was improvised by Barry. So the script only had him doing one simple action. And then he basically asked Emerald, can we close the set? And I just want to see where I can take the scene as this character. And then improvised the rest of it, which makes him like Barry. I think
what's going on there?
A little bit of a freak there, Barry.
You know what's crazy? you said two Olivers, and I think I know exactly what you're talking about. Like there are two, I feel like, distinct. You know what's nuts is I was reading the trivia for this film.
Yeah.
In an interview, Oliver Keoghan said that he actually thought that there were five Olivers.
Yes, I read that too.
He wrote a diary. Journal. He wrote daily journals for all five of them to help him get into whatever he thought the scene needed. He would take that particular Oliver. Mm-hmm. So he had literally invented five characters for this one character and tried to portray those in the scenes. You know what's
interesting is I wonder if the five Olivers were real Oliver, the Oliver that exists outside of everyone else. And then there's the Olivers that he presents to each individual person. Like there's an Oliver he presents to Felix, one he presents to Venetia, one he presents to Farley. Like, you know what I mean? And like,
you know what makes sense to me about this movie? And I think it's something that no one's really discussed is I think if you are even slightly neurodivergent, you can relate to Oliver on some level because
it's masking.
It is a masterclass in masking, and you can see it. And I feel like I want to watch it again now that I know that he has five Olivers and almost pick that out. Cause I'm like, you can almost see the scenes where the mask comes off for some of these characters where he's talking and you're like, oh, that was him masked. And now this is him. And almost every time he unmasks, he fucking kills someone.
Yes.
Like, do you notice that? Like every time that he unmasks a little bit, he's like, now it's your time. And I'm like, fuck. Like,
yeah, basically it's like his takedown. Well, and I do find it interesting because I also looking at the trivia that Emerald Fennell and Barry Keoghan had this code word for when he needed to be the real Oliver. And it was Minotaur, because you see the death of Felix happened at the Minotaur statue in the middle of the maze.
Yep.
But I also think it was interesting because that Minotaur statue was modeled after Barry Keoghan's body. And so in essence, I think there was this whole kind of thing of Oliver is the Minotaur in the maze.
In the center of the maze.
In the center of the maze.
Yeah.
And so if people don't know, the legend of the Minotaur was basically this half man, half bull that would be released into the labyrinth for like basically the king would throw people into the labyrinth to die. And only unless you could get to the center of the maze, then you like could live, but they would put in a Minotaur. And if the Minotaur found you before you got to the center, you died. And I think that's kind of it. It's, I think the center of the maze is who Oliver is. And I think all of the characters were in this labyrinth trying to get to the center of maze, trying to find Oliver, but Oliver himself is also the Minotaur and he killed them before they could find out who he is. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
100%.
I feel like there's this overarching metaphor and only, I feel like Emerald does such a good job of incorporating such a small thing into the movie. I could go on and on.
To take it a step further, I feel like I've seen so many people talk about this movie being about like sexual deviancy. And I'm like, not really. Like there's nothing beyond, it's not even 40 Shades of Grey level. And that's not even that sexual.
It's not about the sex. It's about the obsession.
The obsession. Yeah. And that's what it is. Like,
yes,
this movie is about obsession, but I've heard people like compare it to The Talented Mr. Ripley. And I get what they're saying, but this is not a movie about obsession in the way that he wants to be a particular person. And people have also talked about this movie being a eat the rich movie. And I disagree with that statement as well, because
I don't think so either.
This is a, I want to be the rich movie.
Yes.
Like he knew what he wanted.
It's not taking down the rich. It's becoming them.
He wanted to become it. And he wanted to destroy that entire family to become the rich.
That's part of his speech. When he talks about Felix, he's like, you know, was I in love with him? And he goes, no, but I loved him. And then he repeats, he's like, I loved him. Yes. I loved him. And then his speech at the end mirrors it. And he goes, but I hated him.
Yes.
And I think this is such an interesting look, because you do think there may be a romantic love between Oliver and Felix. And I don't think it's so much romance. And I think it's obsession and possession. I think it's Oliver wanted what Felix had. He saw Felix for who he was. And he had this obsession over who he was, because Felix, like he said, was effortless. Everyone flocked to him, like women and men, and everything came so easy to him. And so I think Oliver saw that, and he loved that about Felix, the way that everyone else loved Felix. But at the same time, it's almost like he wanted to encompass Felix. Like he felt so possessive over this man, to the point that he immediately cut anything off with Venetia just to appease Felix, even though I think he would have 100% pursued that, you know,
because
that's who Oliver is in real life. And, but him killing him wasn't so much of like, I don't think it was this thing of like, I hate him so much, I just want to murder him. I think it was just, I think he hates that he is who he wants to be. And he will never, I think he understands he will never be Felix. Like he will never be him. And I think that's why he hates him. Like, you exist, but I want to be you, but you're already you. And then he does the next best thing that he can do, which is take him out of the equation and then input himself later on. But I think there's still that, I think he still struggles with that a little bit.
Yeah. Cause I think also, and I think this explains the grave scene. I think it's the yes that he wanted him, but he also wanted to keep his attention only on him, because you see these little juxtaposition things of him talking to girls who Felix has dropped and having these one-off conversations with them, you know, as they're asking about Felix. And I think that he is also in that same realm of like, I also want Felix's attention, and I also want his attention to be on me all the time.
Again, it's that possession. Like, he wants ownership over Felix's time, over him personally, which it's actually kind of twofold, because even Venetia mentions that to Oliver when they're at the dinner, and she's like, oh, you're just one of his toys. And she's like, Felix doesn't like other people playing with his toys. She's like, even if he's done playing with them himself. And I think that's a good kind of thing of Felix also has a little bit of possession and ownership over Oliver as well. Like, I almost thought, when he was upset about Venetia and Oliver, I don't even think he's upset that Oliver is with his sister. No. I think he's more upset that Benicio is taking Oliver away from him.
100. And he even explains that because I thought we had another, what, Eddie situation? I forget what the name
was. Yes, it was Eddie. Yeah.
Yeah, we had another Eddie situation. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, because Eddie did this and we had to get rid of him. And the way he talked about it had nothing to do with the fact that he was having sex with his sister. It had everything to do with the fact that his attention wasn't on Felix, even when Felix didn't give a fuck if the attention was on him or not.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Because he likes basking in that. That's because that's what he's used to. And that's, you know, everyone's always obsessed with Felix, right? So I just thought it was just very almost like the situation between these, the relationship between them was like parasymbiotic, you know, like they just were so obsessed with owning each other, but obviously to the detriment mainly of Felix.
So Jade, we're running a little bit heavy. So let's pick, there's a lot of great quotes in this movie. Let's pick two quotes each because I have like 17 written down, which is a rarity for me. But I have two I know in particular that I want to talk about. What are some of your favorite quotes from this film?
So this one's a pretty funny one. This is by Elspeth. She's talking to Oliver and she's talking about Benicia because she's like, I just don't know why Benicia doesn't settle down. It could be with a man or a woman. And she goes, I was a lesbian for a while, you know, but it was all a bit too wet for me in the end. Men are so lovely and dry.
Jade, that was one of the ones I had written down. Like that quote to me so perfectly sums up Elspeth. Like she's just, it was amazing. Like that, the way it was delivered to, I loved it. I loved everything about that.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Like that explains who she is to her core.
The one that I loved, one of my favorite quotes from this movie is from Benicia, and it's after Felix dies and she's in the bathtub and she's, it's the moth. It's the moth one. And she's describing, she's having a breakdown, obviously, but she's talking to Oliver and going, you know, what's funny. My dad has gotten to call you Spider-Man. And he goes, not the superhero. You're always spinning your webs into everything. You're just lurking and just spinning your webs. But she goes, I don't think you're a spider. And she goes, you're a moth, quiet, harmless, drawn to shiny things, just banging up against the window. And she takes her hand and she like slaps him like in the face a couple times. And she goes, begging to get in. And she goes, and you've done it now. You've put your holes in everything and you've eaten us from the inside out. And I'm like,
so good.
Like it, that line sums up the character of Oliver and sums up the movie. Like she
had him in that moment.
Understood him in that moment. Like I feel like Venetia was the only person who actually saw Oliver for who he was.
And that's exactly it. And I feel the same way too. Like I said, like, I feel like he truly revealed himself to Venetia, like in that moment under the moonlight. And like I said, when he called himself a vampire, I felt like he 100% gave away exactly who he was. And she saw that. And she saw that and she was accepting of that in a way because she wanted more from him. And I think once he denied her, that's when she truly realized, oh, he's even darker than I thought because his obsession with my brother outweighs any sort of feelings he could have for me, you know?
Yeah.
God, that moment was so good. And then the kiss after too.
Oh, yeah.
When they said that. And then
she's still obsessed with him. Even she knows. And she still knows she's obsessed with him.
Yep. Oh, that was brilliant.
That scene alone made me go, I'm flagging her on IMDb because whatever she's in next, I want to see what that performance looks like.
God, yes. Same. Kind of in the same vein, my second quote here is after everything that happened and Felix and Oliver had that confrontation at the Minotaur in the maze, and Felix kind of looks at him and he's like, I don't know what you are, but I do know you. You make my fucking blood run cold. And I think, again, it was that moment of Felix also had his number where he was like, something about you is wrong. And like, I don't like it. Cause, you know, I think Felix, obviously Oliver worked the hardest to keep the veil over Felix's eyes to give him the charm. And once Felix truly saw him after, you know, seeing his parents, like that veil was lifted for him. And then that's when Felix was like, oh, this guy, something is fucked about this guy.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's nuts. Well, Jade, now that we've gone, talked about this for forever.
Yes.
Might need to edit some of this out. We'll see how this goes. But Jade, what is your final rating for Saltburn?
I think it's no surprise here. It's a treasure. Yeah. I mean, this movie is just brilliant. This is something I'm going to return to. Absolutely.
Yeah. I might go try to buy this film on DVD just to keep a physical copy of it. Just to have it. That's how good I think it is. This for me is an absolute treasure. This is great. Like, I now also have Emerald Fennell. Like, I'm going to be honest. I didn't think Promising Young Woman was the greatest movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I had some issues with it. This, as her second movie, amazing. And I want to see whatever she's doing next. I want to be a part of that. I will pay money. I will go to the theater, whatever needs to happen.
She's on the hot list now.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. This movie got a lot of hype for the wrong reasons. And I don't think is fair. The reasons it's popular is not fair to how genius the writing and the directing is of this movie.
100%. And I think, again, it comes down to a little bit maybe age and experience. And I think right now it's hot with the 20-year-olds for the wrong reasons. But I think those of us who are a little bit over that hill, I think we're seeing a little bit more of what it is. And I can't wait for those people to come back to it again and then really understand more, because it's going to be an experience.
Absolutely. That was a review of Saltburn. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime.
You know, it's not for you.
Lots of people get lost in Saltburn.
Oh, that's just giving me goosebumps. Look, Pamela.
Oh, no.
I think you're a moth. Quiet, harmless, drawn to shiny things.
What have you done?
I just thought that maybe I could help.
You're not leaving us. You're not leaving,
Saltburn. And once again, our movie this week was Saltburn. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime. Go buy yourself a copy. I'm going to do that because if this ever gets pulled off, I'm going to want to have that copy just on hand.
Yeah.
But Jade, we spent a lot of time talking about the Emmys and a lot of the other stuff that went on, and tons of time talking about Saltburn. So let's just dive right in. What are we watching and interviewing? Jesus, I can't fucking anywhere. I shouldn't be trusted with anything. What are we watching and reviewing next week?
So we are watching Self-Reliance now on Hulu. Is written, directed, and stars Jake Johnson, who you guys may know from New Girl. And it is a comedy about a man who is given the opportunity to participate in a life or death reality game show where he's offered $1 million to be hunted down.
Sounds like a different version of The Game where it's a little more funny.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, the world's deadliest game or the deadliest game, but it's a comedy version.
I'm down. That sounds great. Also, interesting cast. You have Wayne Brady,
mm-hmm.
Anna Kendrick. You also have Christopher Lloyd in this. I mean,
yeah, Andy Samberg. It seems like just kind of this all-star comedy cast. Like, he almost got like all of his like friends together and was like, hey, you want to do this movie that I'm writing?
I almost feel like he was calling them up as he was writing it. Like, hey, I'm writing this movie. I have this character, Andy, do you want to fucking be in this? And he's like, yeah, sure. And like, hey, Anna, I feel like Anna Kendrick is in like half of Jake Johnson's projects anyway. Like,
you're right.
Like, isn't that the Beer Buddies? Like, was one, right?
Yeah. What was the one called, like, The Dig or something?
Dig, yeah. I think we reviewed that one. Yeah.
That one.
So I'm totally down. This seems super exciting. But Jade, anything else before we sign off and come back next week?
You follow us on all of our socials. We are on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as Our Taste is Trash. You can also find us on our website, ourtasteistrash.com.
Come back next week when we review our movie. It is called
Self-Reliance on Hulu.
All right. Come back next week.
To get ourselves a treat.